Is the recording started?
Just now, Bill, yes.
Okay, this is a meeting of the Arizona Historical Society's Governance Committee. It's January the 11th. It's a little after 1:30. I'm going to call the meeting to order. I'm going to indicate, and you'll just indicate whether you're here or not. Linda Whitaker, are you here?
Here.
Mark McNella?
Here.
Bruce Gwynn?
Here.
Richard Shaw?
Present.
Boy Coy? John Lacey? Let's see who else is on the committee.
Lynn Marcus?
Lynn Marcus, you here?
Here.
Good, Lynn. You've been very quiet. It appears that there is a quorum present, so we'll proceed with the meeting. I'm going to make a, I'm going to ask if any of you have any objection to the minutes of the November 5, 2018 meeting or any additions you'd like to make or corrections. There being nothing, I'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved.
So moved.
You're second?
Second, Mark.
Any opposed? There being no opposition, the minutes are approved. I'm going to make a call to the public. I think that provision has been made so that the public can attend this meeting. The proceedings are being recorded. Any comment by a public member or anything that would may require action by this committee will be studied by staff. And if it is appropriate, it will be placed on the next agenda for the next meeting. I have no idea when that meeting will be at this point. Okay, we have two matters on our agenda for discussion. And I'd like to take the second one first. That's the report from the work group relative to the progress and compliance with the audit. And I think Dr. Burns has a presentation he'd like to make. He sent me the presentation like a PowerPoint on my computer. It's very good, by the way, Dr. Burns. Would you like to go ahead? Well, first off, Lynn, do you have anything you'd like to add to your report?
No. In the interest of highlighting what Dr. Burns will be discussing, which is rather than chew up time in the AHS full board meeting with the usual review of the reports, we would simply focus people on Dr. Burns's presentation because we believe that the particular issue that Dr. Burns will raise at this point outweighs all of the other issues that we're dealing with regard to the sunset audit. Just so you know, at the meeting, Dr. Burns and I will be dividing responsibilities along the lines of good cop, bad cop, and I've got the bad cop straw. One of the things that we will need to emphasize to the board is the gravity of what Dr. Burns is about to present, and the fact that if we do not find a way on behalf of the agency to address this constructively before the next sunset audit, we will all, and that includes every one of us on the board, be held to account for a failure to address a significant issue. And that message will be delivered by me to the board pretty much as I delivered it here today. With that,
right,
I would simply turn matters over to Dr. Burns and have him walk through this presentation for you.
Thank you, Lynn. So,
Lynn, wait a minute. Lynn, before you turn it over to Dr. Burns, Lynn, did you have anything you'd like to add to this discussion? You're on the work group response.
Yes, I think this work product and what Lynn just said represents a pooled contribution from everybody.
Okay, Linda, I know you had some comments that are going to be taken up later on. Is that all you have to add as to the audit status?
No. I mean, yes. Yes, that's all I have.
Yes, yes. Okay, Dr. Prince, could you make your presentation?
Sure. I apologize to those of you who are not in front of your computer right now, but I'll try to talk through the slides that are photographed so that the folks who are just on their phone can understand as well. So at the beginning of the presentation, as Len indicated, he'll contextualize for the board why this is an important issue that we have to address now. And the short answer is, in all of the audits going back to the 1990s, if not before, these same issues have been pointed out again and again. So this is a plan to address the latest sunset review and performance audit findings relative to collections. So as I said, this is a problem that's been decades in the making. We have long focused on the collecting portion of our mission, placing less emphasis on the preservation, interpretation, and dissemination aspects of the mission. And we've not supplied adequate resources. We've not allocated those for collection, processing, management, and care. There is no line item in the budget for collections care. And I think we all know how severe the pressures are on the budget, so it's understandable why that's not there now, but going back, I can't find a line item for that either. Next. Dimensional versus our three-dimensional collections. The archival collections have generally been processed and cared for according to industry standards and best practices. The same cannot be said for the three-dimensional object collections. The issues are most pronounced with the Flagstaff collections, followed by Yuma, then Tucson, and finally Tempe. And next are illustrations of those issues noted by the auditors. Here you see an image of the Connex boxes where collections are stored in Flagstaff outside. That is to illustrate the lack of any climate control for Flagstaff collections. Next is an image that shows the extreme overcrowding with Flagstaff collections. That was an issue that the auditors in particular noted. Next you see an image of the new collection storage in Yuma, which illustrates the lack of proper shelving, followed by an image of a lot of wooden shelving and flooring, which shows, again, improper shelving and flooring that is off-gassing, followed by an image of the large collection storage area in Tucson, where you're seeing essentially the same thing, decades-old wooden shelving that is off-gassing.
What does that mean, Brooke?
Off-gassing is, for example, if, MDF board or particle board, you know how it smells?
Yeah.
That is all of the chemicals that wood is, that wood is getting off.
Oh, okay.
And those chemicals, those fumes can be harmful to some objects, many objects. Particularly things that are organic materials that degrade at a more rapid rate than, say, something like rock or, stone. Fabric. And then next you see an example of a room chock full of stuff in Tucson that illustrates our backlog of unprocessed materials. I'm sorry I can't make these bigger. They will be in the board presentation. Next, you see an image of here in Tempe that is, again, a backlog of our unprocessed materials, and an image next of the overcrowding here in Tempe. Next, there are four images that actually are not our collection storage. I wish they were. They are the Easton Collection Storage Facility at the Museum of Northern Arizona in Flagstaff. This shows you The first is properly stored artifacts. Next is an example, and I'm showing these specifically because these are terms that I use in following slides, so you will have already seen an illustration of them. This shows proper artifact housing, as we would call it, so all of the things that are meant to keep the object safe and stable. And if I'm going into too much detail or boring you, remember I started my career as a registrar.
Just to ask the question, did the auditor say do it this way, or this is your example?
They did not.
This is your example of what it's
showing you.
Richard, could I get you to speak up?
Okay. I just asked the question. We're looking at pictures of the proper way to store things, and the question I asked is whether these were auditor pictures saying, hey, guys, this is the way to do it, or whether Jim has produced the pictures to show ourselves how to do it. He said the latter.
Yeah, these meet industry standards and best practices. And so, again, this is showing proper cabinetry. That's a cabinet made by a company called Delta Design. And then finally, you see here, this is a piece of prehistoric cordage, it's called. It's basically a prehistoric fiber. And that is an example of what we call a microenvironment. That's all archival materials, and that cordage is sandwiched in there so that the temperature and the humidity inside that package, when it was encapsulated, as we would say, tends to stay a lot more stable. So for particularly fragile items, things that you really want to maintain tight control of, forgive me if this is a knowledge you already have, but typically we try to maintain objects with not more than a 1 to 2 degree temperature swing within a 24-hour period, or not more than a 1 to 2% humidity change within that period of time. The humidity change is even more crucial than the temperature change. And you can imagine, it's probably going through your head, what the heck do you guys do during monsoon season? It's a problem. And for particularly fragile items like that, that helps to buffer. So, you know, if the humidity is swinging 20%, 30% in a day outside that package, it might only be swinging 3-5% inside the package.
And James, let me interject here, please. We know at every location the humidity swing is enormous.
Yeah, that's right, Linda. Okay, so the next slide focuses on what we have, how we use it, and where these objects are located. So this is small text, so I'm going to have to read this to you guys, but there's a copy of this in your email. These questions encapsulate the challenges with our three-dimensional object collections as depicted in the previous illustrations. Our objects have not been consistently processed, researched, stored, or inventoried. Many objects lack archival housing. That's like the acid-free materials we would use to safely house an object. Microenvironments, which I previously explained, or adequate humidity and temperature control. A backlog of the unprocessed objects makes it challenging for us to know what we have. If we don't know what we have, we can't use it, we can't interpret it, or make it available to the public. All things that, according to our statutory...
Can't even serve.
Right. We're, you know, so additionally, we duplicate our collecting efforts. And I just want to point out, that's another, we keep talking about what are, if any, benefits of our reorganization. That is one. Our reorganization should help tremendously so that we do not duplicate collecting efforts. And finally, storage conditions, our lack of human resources, and inconsistent data entry complicate our inventory control. So that's an explanation for you of why we are where we are and why the auditors are finding what they're finding. Let's talk for a minute about objects, resources, and relevance. Not all objects are created equal. Some objects that would be useful for our educational purposes, for example, were accessioned into what we call the permanent collection, limiting our ability to use them. The permanent collection, think of it as receiving the gold standard of care. Then there are other things that are categorized as research collections or education collections or props that can be used in a totally different way to interpret and disseminate Arizona's history. The permanent collections contain objects, in our case, that do not necessarily support the mission of AHS, that are duplicative and or are in poor condition. Three-dimensional objects use a vast amount of space in our organization's physical plant. Even with that space, we are not always able to preserve or store every object according to standards and best practices. Yes, Lynn.
In terms of the objects that do not support our mission that are in the permanent collection, for example,
an example would be, I can't give you a specific name of an object, but I'm aware from curatorial and collection staff that we have objects that don't pertain to Arizona at all, or northern Mexico, or anything remotely close.
But they're in the permanent
collection. They're in the permanent collection because, you know, well, collecting evolves, and standards and best practices evolve. And so they could have been collected many decades
ago. Well, a good example of that, in my memory anyway, we had a bunch of things from A.J. Bayless, Mr. Bayless, relative to things that he had collected. Now,
yes.
On one hand, Bayless is definitely a local institution still around in one form. And another, a coffee grinder from New York, et cetera. And I don't remember if we gave it to a different museum or sold it, but we did take it. So, it seems logical at the time for Mr. Bayless. He's got a whole collection of stuff. And then on the other hand, we said, well, it's not. So that would be maybe an example of what you're doing. Now, hopefully you're not remembering that, which is installed versus something else.
Well, you brought
it. Oh, it's John Lacey finally. For some reason, I haven't been able to get in.
Oh, I'm glad you kept trying, John. You haven't missed a lot of discussion. Judge Garbarino reversed the order of the discussion and asked me to begin by giving my presentation about the Sunset Review and Performance Audit relative to their findings about collections, and you can find a copy of my presentation in your email inbox, and we're currently on slide 17.
Oh, okay, fine. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Burns, let me ask you a question. I look back at the pictures that you've provided us, and I know that's just a snapshot of what's out there, what we have.
Yeah.
How much of this out-of-state thing and in-state thing where there are duplicative items can we remedy by deaccessioning those?
I'm very glad that you brought that up. I didn't say a lot about that in this presentation because I know it can be a prickly topic, but my feeling is that we could resolve the vast majority of those issues with a thoughtful and comprehensive deaccession process.
So,
have a percentage approximately of what we have that could be deaccession?
I don't, Linda. Anything that I said would be not even an educated guess at this point.
That's a debatable. Yes, no.
It's not, please don't be thinking it's the vast majority of the collection. I'm thinking it's under, if we're talking just about things that are not germane to the mission or that are duplicative, it's well under 10%.
Hey, Linda, this is a local question. We just,
yes.
You know, with your help, we went through all of our three-dimensional stuff and put it in that storage that Jake told the slide. So can I assume that all of that has the correct provenance?
What we have currently in the storage in the City Hall facility in Yuma is the stuff that has either positive provenance to Yuma or questionable, and anything that was positive or just kind of hanging on the cusp, we weren't sure, it's all there. We got rid of all the other stuff.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
We're talking with, and how much, because I think people need to know here, Bruce.
Yes.
How many dumpsters or how many truckloads does that represent?
Well, probably, well, just, shoot, a whole bunch.
Over 50%, over 50% of the total materials in storage. That's what it represented.
I took a whole pickup load of mannequins to the dump. It, and I'm talking 30 or 40 mannequins with no clothes on. And when I got to the dump, the guy says, that's pornographic. I said, no, it's going in the dump. So it was, we just had a mess, an absolute mess.
Okay, someone brought up the term provenance, and that's a perfect segue to the last point on the slide, which is that many objects that have been accessioned into the permanent connection lack provenance, which is information about ownership, how things were used, who owned them. That makes it really difficult for us to interpret the object's story. When we talk about objects in a curatorial setting, which would include interpreting and disseminating information, we talk about our ability to, quote, make the objects sing, as one of my colleagues says. So making those objects come alive through stories and fulfilling our guiding statement passed at the August board meeting, which is to create transformative experiences through history. So if we don't have the information, it makes it very difficult to bring those objects alive. A little bit about provenance. I figured you guys would want some examples. So an example of good provenance and attribution from Flagstaff is Josephine, who is a taxidermied mountain lion head gifted by Mrs. Alexander Brody, daughter of Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Brody, 1st U.S. Volunteer Cavalry, Teddy Roosevelt's Rough Riders. Josephine was one of the well-documented mascots of the Rough Riders. Upon her death as an adult, Brody had Josephine preserved, and it was inherited by Brody's daughter, Mary, and then donated in 1955. An example of poor provenance and attribution from Flagstaff is a World War I trench lighter found in collection. Other than a description, any trust knows nothing about this object. An example from Tempe of good provenance, the Grace Norton Fiesta dress, which is presently on exhibition, includes information about the award history of the dress, as well as information about its creator. The archives has an extensive file about the maker's dress business, including photographs, receipts of sale, and advertisements, which we use to supplement the object labels whenever we're doing interpretation. An example here of poor provenance and attribution is a 1977 donation of a circa 1900 meat grinder and, quote, a reversible carpet, circa 19th century. No additional information. We're wrapping up here. We've just got a few slides left. So staff actions that should be taken to address the findings will include developing, thank you for the phrase, Linda, a reappraisal process for collections, resulting in further actions that could include a tiering system for objects that's more sophisticated than what we have now. Remember when I talked about permanent collections, props, education, for example, possible transfer or exchange to other museums if an object falls within their mission and not ours, and or outright deaccession. Emphasizing storytelling and interpretation to utilize our collections for the greatest public benefit, and de-emphasizing the act of collecting itself and our longstanding focus on ownership. Reassessing all of our AHS object collections to determine which ones actively support the mission, adhere to our collections policy, which specifically states that when we accession something, we must be able to properly care for it. And finally, ones that have solid provenance. And finally, developing a collecting plan to guide future collecting efforts. I've also provided some essential data. Our Vice President for Collections and Education, Dr. Peterson, and Vice President for Library and Archives, Susan Irwin, have begun a study that will be complete by March, for the March board meeting, which will include an outline of the steps in the process of acquiring new materials so that the board on a very granular level understands that when something comes into our collection, you know, it's not like two steps. It's you know, there's 12 things that have to be done before we've really been able to process it in a way that we can disseminate information about it, make it available to the public, interpret it. An estimate of the amount of time that it takes to move a sample object through that process, an estimate of how many items can be collected and processed in a year with current staffing levels, cost estimates for archival supplies, housing and shelving, and space cost per square foot for storage in each of our locations. Another essential point, there have been improvements made in the past 5 years. As Bruce and Linda have outlined, Yuma objects have been moved into a more secure storage location. Many of the Flagstaff objects have been cataloged and inventoried. Progress has been made on the backlog in Tucson, although it's still there. Many objects have been rehoused here in Tempe. So it's been a little bit of a different focus in each place, and that's because the state of collections management in each location is at a different level. It's not been consistent across the agency. Presently, we have 58,752 three-dimensional objects in the database. 58,742. Except that's Flagstaff, Tempe, Tucson in the database. That's not counting the stuff that's not in the database, and we need to get our head wrapped around that. And that's not counting any Yuma collections, and we know that there are Yuma collections in the database, but Yana has had a super busy week, so we just don't have that number yet. The total square footage of storage space currently used for collections statewide is 26,493 square feet. 26,493 square feet. And our estimated current utility costs for that storage space, so that's heating and cooling and humidification in some places of that space, is $39,389.87 annually. A final report. The final report will also include, this is the one we're talking about in March, an estimate of the space we could free up if non-mission related items were deaccessioned, an estimate of how long it'll take us to fill up that space again, analysis of how much space we're currently using for storage that has been taken away from other functions. That is particularly a problem here in Tempe. A cost estimate of what it will cost to rent climate-controlled storage space for collections that are not presently housed according to industry standards and best practices, or a similar estimate for building climate-controlled storage space, or a cost estimate for adding compact shelving in Tempe and Tucson, which would give us a lot more room. We estimate we could gain about 40% more space by adding compact shelving. So we want to get you estimates on the options. Finally, next steps. We think there can be a remedial plan put into place in May 2019. It's important for everyone to understand that progress toward those plan goals is dependent on collection positions being filled. We currently have one collections person for the whole state. Required resources will be determined by the approach adopted by the board after reviewing the March report. We'll create a timeline by May detailing the short-term and the long-term work plan, and we will do our best to identify some sources for funding. That's all.
Well, you've outlined a lot of work for yourself. You should be able to give the board a plan by May, is that correct?
Yeah.
Does anybody have any questions or anything to add to this, Lynn or Linda?
I do. I think it's packed in some of the data that James may be working with. But one thing the board ought to know in terms of numbers is how much is this stuff worth? Because we have to file reports annually to risk management, who actually then assesses what we pay for insurance. And there's one number that I have for Tucson. I don't have it for any of the others. But the three-dimensional objects in Tucson, in a 2012-2014 valuation for the state, was $40,043,000 just for the three-dimensional objects. I think there's a goal that we will have valuation numbers for the other locations, and I think that adds a gravitas, not just for the state, but for this board.
Is there some kind of control in place right now where we are looking at those items that we accession, maybe reduce them until we get this thing under control?
Yes, I'm strongly considering that, Bill. I don't... I've not used specifically the word moratorium because that has far-reaching and long-standing implications. If you start using that word, you risk losing donors long-term. But we're being very, very judicious. I don't think we haven't accepted more than 12 items in the 9 months I've been here.
One of the comments that I would make, as some of you know, I'm fond of comparing us to other agencies. One of the ways to think about this, and the reason that this is important to the board, is that in a sense, every object, every artifact, every document we get is like one of our children. We are not nearly in importance, but in comparison, similar to the Department of Child Protective Services. The state looks to us to take in these children and to make sure that they're safe, they're properly housed, they're properly cared for. And in our particular case, they're also used constructively to help the state realize its history. At some point, if we are not adequately taking care of our children, the state is going to hold us collectively responsible. Now, there are two things that we can do, the staff can do with support from the board, that allow us to discharge our responsibilities professionally. And that is, we can either put together a plan which shows how much additional resource we need in order to bring everything into a state that is considered to be professionally top-notch. Or what we can do is present an alternative that shows what we can do with the resources we have, and then what our contingency is for those things we cannot properly handle. From that point, it becomes the responsibility of the board with Dr. Burns to escalate the issue up the chain of command, and I think in the Department of Administration, until someone either says, no, we don't have the resources, so go with the plan that allows you to do what you can do, or they say, okay, we will do what we can to allocate some additional resources so that you can stretch yourself further and accommodate the care of some of these children you've received. That's the reason why this is important to the board. If we really think about what's likely to occur in the next audit, I suspect that the internal controls for things like finances, et cetera, will probably be in very good shape based on what I've seen of what Dr. Burns is doing with the staff. Our major exposure is going to be someone pointing the finger at us and saying, people around Arizona are giving you stuff and you aren't taking care of it. We've got to be able to answer that question professionally.
Doesn't really sound like we have the resources to take care of what we have, let alone what we might have in the future.
You're correct.
Hence the reason for putting together a plan with alternatives.
Yeah. I have a question in closing. Is this new information for you all?
Well, I've been on the board, 5 years, well, 1 year out, and that's new information as far as I'm concerned.
Well, the concept's not new in my 15-plus years, but specifics are new. In other words, the quantifiable, we have 52,000 artifacts, we have this, and the gap. And I would add, as the argument for we can't do this, so here's a plan to reduce our responsibility, or we will do it with more resources. The third leg of that stool is to show that, indeed, it's appropriate that we can, to rebut the issue of, well, maybe you need to work harder, or are you working at all? I mean, you know, I'm exaggerating, but you need to say, in the industry standard of 50,000 artifacts, the number of staff for this would be, ours is, and which is half that, I'm making that up, and so by that measure of resources, we're actually above average, hypothetically. So, but you can't say, we can't do it, so this is what you have to live with, or we can do it, but give us another 10 million. The third part is, we're doing our job. I'll repeat myself. I think that's pretty important. Because they will ask, these people will definitely say, well, I don't know, they did it over there at the Caballeros in Wickenburg, why can't you do it?
Well,
and we have to have that answer.
I'll tell you that, I know, Judge, you said, well, this is a lot of work. I am far more confident that we can do the work than that we can find the data. We, as an industry, museums are notorious for having, ironically, for having very little data. To be able, I mean, I might be able to selectively, because they're super close colleagues, pick a few museums, whether or not the auditors think that that's an actual comp, because they don't understand. They go, oh, look, Minnesota. Minnesota is in a stratosphere. So far from where we are.
Well, you should be able to show that. They have, for their 100,000 artifacts, they have 47 people doing it and a budget of X, for example.
Right.
Which, in their case, they probably do have the data to share. And then you have your own experience with Wickenburg and so forth. I think the case can be made that we're doing a professional job with the resources we have, but we do need to make the case.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I get the last bit of feedback. Would you change anything about this presentation before we make it to the full board?
Well, I don't think it would work, really, but whatever you could get before that in terms of how we're doing compared to, and I know you can't do it with 1,000 museums, but you can do it in your own experience. And say, we have one person to manage 50,000
museums. I can provide that by March, not by January 25th.
Well, March is a serious one.
Okay.
But yeah.
Okay.
My sense of it is, even not even printed, my sense of it is where we are is maybe not even half. But, yeah.
Okay. All right.
Is there any other input into this that anybody has that they'd like to direct to Dr. Burns? Well, Dr. Burns, we want to thank you for your work. It certainly brought something to our attention that, although we knew it, I think, I think we needed to hear it again. I think it's a very important part of the audit, and I'm sure that Leonard has recognized that probably a lot more than we do. And I think it's essential for us to get to work on it and see what we can do with it. Is there anything further relative to this presentation?
Yeah, I do. Well, I just have one side comment in terms of accessions. You know, some years back I was involved with the Scottsdale Senior League, and they took all of the antiques from Goodwill and sold them collectively, and they make $100,000 to $150,000 a year, and this was many years ago. Antique being, what, anything old, some genuine stuff. Likewise, as slightly off the point, but still relevant, we can encourage, just bring whatever you have and put it in the we're going to sell it pile to reiterate the concept versus the accession pile. Now, if it's somebody's grandmother's special, we can take it and accession it, or we can't, then we can't, again. And we will find the home for this, however, and you can take your tax deduction. It could be a substantial revenue potential if we developed it at another time, place, and another outline for discussion. So we don't want to just say, oh, that thing, we don't want it. Well, we'll take it. However, it has to go down that path instead of this path. That's all.
I would make one final comment, and that is Linda Whitaker has lived through this for her entire career with the Historical Society. And I think Linda gets the credit for working with Dr. Burns to escalate the seriousness of this issue.
Thank you, Linda.
You're welcome. And Bruce Gwynn is my partner. We have been through the artifact wars, and he can fill in board members if they're interested.
Listen, you were a great leader, Linda, and we're much appreciated.
Sounds like to me that the war is just beginning.
Hang on to that thought, Bill. Hang on to that thought.
Just a writer's note, some of the old timers will recall, but it's directly on the point if we're talking about the accession. I don't remember the year, but I was here, and at that time this was called the Marty Museum, Arizona Historical. The Phoenix Police Department proposed to give us the vehicle that was blown up and killed the Phoenix Republic newspaper guy because it was stories for next year. We didn't have to think too long about that, but that would have been catastrophic. Even though it has a nuance, it would be a catastrophic thing to accept, and that was the end of that. But it just shows you that, yeah, there's history. Yeah, it is a really big deal, every newspaper. But for us, the Marley Museum, bad idea.
Well, I think every community has a vehicle. All right. I'm sure we're going to hear more about this at the regular meeting here on the 25th of January. It was a good presentation, Dr. Burns. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, the next item on the agenda, we only have two items. The next item on the agenda is the, unless you have something else to present, Lynn, on behalf of your work group.
No, unless Linda does.
Nope.
All right. Let's get on with the review and discussion of the proposed policy. We have before us a policy that was submitted by President Coy, Dr. Coy, at the last meeting that we all looked at. We have a redraft and a combination of that policy, or an attempt to combine that policy with existing policy by John Lacey. And I know, John, you put in a ton of work on what you presented to us. And we have a lot of suggestions and thoughts. We also have a letter from Linda, which I have here, that where she has some objections. I don't know if they're objections or they're just recommendations. But I think
recommendations, Bill, recommendations.
All right. I think that they deserve being heard. So let's start out first. I'd like to hear from John. John, you put this together. I know it's difficult to put together two policies that contain language so different. Can you tell us where you are and what you think?
Yeah, let me explain what this all was. Probably 12 years ago, I attempted to pull together all of the existing policies and put them into a single document. And so what I did is I went back to that and updated it with some of the policies that I knew had been adopted in the meantime. And in looking at that, I tried to reformat it into a general outline, and then to insert the proposed policies that had been offered by Michael and Roy at the recent board meeting that we talked about in general terms. So I sort of spliced all those things together. Now I will say that in the older policies that included a number of things related to committees, where there was a policy related to the actions of or responsibilities of that committee, I compared that with some of the earlier Auditor General's comments that, quite frankly, I deemed to be totally inappropriate in many respects because they substantially crossed the line between governance and management. So, you know, I used my own judgment to include those items of the comments that I thought were appropriate. So and also with the more recent policy suggestions, I also exercised a little bit of my own opinion in the requirements or some of the prohibitions on activities of the executive director in either providing comments on proposed board members or requesting the opinion of the Attorney General. I thought in both of those situations it was either potentially an interference with freedom of speech or didn't recognize the fact that the Attorney General's office is ultimately responsible for legal overview of the Arizona Historical Society, and you really didn't want to have anything in policy that would restrict the activities of the executive director. But on the other hand, there's certainly nothing wrong with saying that if the executive director is going to request an opinion of the Attorney General as to the efficacy of one of the policies, that the president of the board would be informed of that. So, you know, that I made a couple comments or a couple of suggestions like that. But my main concern in looking at this, what amounts to another compilation, is that there were a number of policies related to the activities of the executive director that we should take a look at and decide whether or not whether or not we wanted to keep those or, you know, redirect those or simply to eliminate them. And so I've indicated those in the draft that I sent along. Now I also one thing that I did do in that draft is I took out the collections policy and the exhibits and educational programming and put those into separate standalone policies just because I think that, you know, they might otherwise get lost in the compilation. So that's what I did.
Okay, Linda, you sent out a email, and you had some recommendations that I'm not sure that they're not well taken. Would you like to go ahead and explain what you're talking about?
Well, I thought it was a call. I thought you sent out a call for suggestions. that this is a daunting task, and it is certainly complex, and you weren't sure how to proceed. And so I weighed in on some approaches, maybe that will simplify things. So, and I think everybody got it. So,
okay. It looks like to me you're saying that there ought to be a board manual.
Yes.
That includes current policies, but that you ought to have a separate board orientation manual. Am I correct?
No. Everything under one cover. Everything right. Under one cover. So this could be just a board manual, period. One, it could be tabbed in terms of an orientation. Then it could go into current policy. And then there's a section and I think John referred to this, how difficult it was going back and aggregating historical documents, et cetera, that impact on policy. And we already have a lot of that material already sent to us, and simply another section that's archival documents. These are fill in the blanks in some of the current policies. It provides context for the policies. It's good reference material, and these are very hard to find documents. So these could simply be at the back for reference, but it could all be compiled under one cover. It doesn't have to. And I will also tell you, because I had to face this, and maybe Len did too when he was president. I was asked to look in the archives in Tempe for a board manual that had some of this material. And in Tempe, we didn't have one. Maybe there was one to be found in headquarters down in Tucson, but they wanted a reference document from which to compare whatever they were looking for. So they are looking for something that is easy access. They are looking for something that the board actually signed off on and did every board member read it. They were asking me that question.
Well, I noticed in your letter you made a critical error.
Okay.
I am offering to organize a basic board manual for your review. I'm sure John would like to help. Do you think that you and John could get together and you could organize it as you suggest?
Yeah, organization is my strong suit. But the idea is this is an organizational, not an editing kind of function. I know John had asked, we've talked about formatting and that kind of thing. But it's not that I would, you know, my function would not be to change any content, but just to arrange the content under one cover, making it accessible to every board member and any auditor who wanted to take a look at it.
I think that'd be great.
Yeah, and I think that was really part of the intention here was to pull everything together as much as we could into a single document or a group of documents, and really the compilation that I started to put together a number of years ago came from very disparate sources.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I organized them the way that I thought made sense. But, you know, I think that, you know, we could very easily, I think that we have a good start in pulling these things together.
We do.
And getting them organized. We do have a board book that was used, maybe 4 years ago, on a board orientation manual, and I think that and I have some of those things at my desk that would include, you know, things like some of the background information for the board on the various organizations, you know, a copy of the statutes that affect the actions and authority of the board, you know, a copy of the open meeting law, and then what we lack in that particular compilation is you know, a good rundown and index to the policies. And, you know, one thing that, that I've thought we've needed in a long time is to decide, you know, what are the policies and bring those to the board, and so we can say, okay, these are the policies, and we are revoking any policies that might be out there that, you know, that, that we don't include in this particular compilation.
Like that approach a lot, because we have to start from somewhere, John. Your work is really, I don't know how you did it without losing your mind, but it's a wonderful place. This is the core. This is the core that will inform everything moving forward, it seems to me.
Could the two of you pull together your work on this and make it available at the next meeting?
The next, what, board meeting or the next governance meeting?
Well, the next board meeting is on the 25th. That's going to be pretty short. And I told Dr. Coy that that was a pretty short time to put this thing together. But I would think by the, at least the, we could get a draft, and then we could be work towards the March meeting. What do you think?
Well, I think it probably depends on what you mean by a draft, Bill. I think that, you know, we can... You know, we can take the materials that we've accumulated thus far, and to sort it out and pull things together that way. I think that the problem is that you really need to get into the weeds on some of these things, and I think that to have a document that ultimately makes sense, that we need to do a little bit of substantive evaluation, and to me, I think it is should be fairly simple in taking a look at the compilation that I put together and deciding, you know, within the context of the responsibilities of the executive director, and decide which of those. Those older policies that we want to include.
Well, I think by the of a new policy down the road, it will automatically, by that same vote, reject the old policies that we no longer feel are appropriate. But what I'd like to have, or what I think would be a good idea, and everybody has to weigh in on this, is that we have one form document, one draft, whether we agree with the contents or not, that we can start working on and talk about individual committees and individual items so that we can move on. I mean, all of us are going to disagree as to some part of the final of the draft, and we can bring those out with some clarity if we have that rough draft in front of us.
I have a question about evaluation guidelines for the director. Is that under the purview and should be created by the executive committee on the board, since they do the evaluation? Is that the provenance of this committee?
No, I think that's something that the executive committee is going to have to weigh in on. But I think we have to have at least a 4 or 5 liner in there for them to start out with. That's what I'm trying to say, is we all are going to disagree with different portions. The executive committee, the governance committee, and all the other committees, they're going to have something to add to this. But we need a form, a basic form to start out with. I think John has done a wonderful job with what he has here. If we could just put it into some, you know, sort of a written form.
What I'd like to do is if you look at the draft, and starting, we've got pages 15, 16, 17, and going on to page 18, I had a number of policies that were left over from before. And, you know, many of them are covered in the materials that the new materials have been submitted. My basic question from my own drafting of this material and putting it together is that we've got these three pages of separate policies.
Mm-hmm.
Which ones of those should we keep, or should we dump them all? And I figured that that was not my responsibility or position to decide which of those were inconsistent or inappropriate based on the on the proposals that were made. And so that's the primary area that I'm concerned with. I think that most of the other stuff within the compilation is not particularly I don't think that most people would have any real substantial objections to it, but I think
right.
that the position of the executive director and the and his or her responsibilities in that particular area, I think we need to take a close look at that. I'm not that worried about the rest of it.
John, may I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
I would be remiss for not bringing up and asking. You probably haven't had time, but December 17th, I completed the project that I was tasked with at the July Governance Committee meeting that I was given a January 1 deadline. So I sent an email with 40 attachments that all relate to policy in some way. That was compiled by going through about 20-some years' worth of board minutes and committee minutes. And so have you had a chance to look at all of that, and is that reflected in the compilation?
I did look at that, and I think a lot of it related to a lot of it related to physical properties like the Oro Bell and some of the other properties of the society. I didn't think that it that many of them related to specifically to the stuff that's in the policies. On the other hand, I think that it does relate very closely to what Linda was talking about in providing background and explanation of some things that have happened over the last 20 years or so.
Super. So we've got a jump on that. The only reason I asked the question, what raised my concern, was the version of the collections policy that you sent out was outdated by 11 years. There were like two or three more versions of that approved. In fact, the most recent being October of 2017.
Well, and that's fine. And honestly,
okay.
I'm not surprised.
Okay.
But I didn't have that in with my collector with the materials that I had put together.
Sure. Okay. I just want you. Yeah. I just want you guys to have a level of confidence that we've now gone through all of that. And so if you say, do you have the most recent version of X? I can show you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I had, I think I've been working on and off policy even before John was, many, many years. I used to have lots of hair. That's why it all disappeared. But I like, I was talking to Len here when we got here earlier, and he was saying in his Motorola days that, when they had a huge amount of collating of policy and paper and reports, they had this carpet meaning spread everything all over the carpet, say which one is canceled, which document, and it needs to be trashed, and then you get right up to where we are, good, bad, or indifferent. This is a universe of possible current policies. Now you move into an editing phase. I went through, which I won't, it's not useful to do now, but for example, in the collections, I looked at one provision, just happened to glance at it here. It said, well, we can loan our artifacts to other qualified people on occasion, but of course the insurance thing becomes their problem. Hello, it isn't their problem. It's always our problem, because if it gets flushed and they didn't have insurance and we haven't included it in our risk management, nobody would argue with that. You just don't say to a collections person, well, don't worry about the insurance, the next trial covers. So it's just right,
Actually, we won't lend until we get a certificate.
Okay, but it just says, though, it's the other guy's problem. It shouldn't say that.
No.
It says, we want certificates in addition to what we have. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying it's done. It's just the fact that it isn't done doesn't mean you don't have a rule to say don't do it.
Right.
And so I have, I had a lot of comments, but Dr. Burns says, well, you know, a lot of these are from now extinct policies that have been edited, so I don't want to edit something that's like, hey, that's all new. So I think the idea of having a coalescing with a bunch of us to say, what did we all agree, more than just John, who's done a great job of taking this ahead, say, this is a universe of possible policies that exist, and have, put them all in one place in a similar format and go through and then edit them up. And from that, I have an old manual or two someplace on the board manuals and my stuff. But, and that can be extracted from the basic policies. Just, you don't have to have two big ones. So,
you know, I hate to beat the dead horse, but I think if we have one comprehensive draft, then we can go through the 40 items that Dr. Burns has submitted and say this either has a place somewhere or it doesn't have a place somewhere, or we should reject it or not reject it. The same with the letter that John wrote regarding the statement about big topics. You know, I agree with John on that. But the point is we have to have a place where we can either reject it or accept it and comment on it. And I think the entire board has that right. And I think it's what we need is to get to the point where we can say, hey, look, Article 1 is either rejected, accepted, or modified as follows.
Yeah, that's exactly, I was sort of trying to say that, maybe not as articulately as you did, but that's exactly right. Get your arms around the universe of possibilities, squeeze in the circle of possibilities, edit what we believe collectively is obviously not right or not good, and then, of course, it's ultimately the board's decision to adopt whatever. Well, I have, we have here in this thing, we have 15 different papers and versions and dates of stuff, and I think we just need to get it all put together in one place and agree this is the universe, and if something's missing, we'll add to the universe, but this is what it is. And I think that's what you were saying, Judge.
But, John, isn't this what we have? I mean, some of this has already been done. So these 23 pages really reflects that work, and is there something that can't be navigated and then edited at the end? Is there something fundamentally confusing or wrong about what he's gathered here? Is there not enough here that we can begin to sift through, or for the purposes of this meeting, confine it to those areas that concern John most?
Well, I don't know, but I have a lot of these that John's correlated, collected from clips of meetings and this and that. I don't think there could be great stuff in there. I don't think we want to go through that at this meeting. I'm happy to go through it at a working session and so forth. And I said I had notes on stuff, but I have John's version of December 17th, has something from the 24th, of something from the 4th of January, and, yeah, I think all the work is here. That's not the point I'm making. But, you know, we talked earlier with Dr. Burns. Some of this is edited up three versions back. It's been nicely edited, except it's now irrelevant. And if we all could get on the same page, because I have stuff that maybe even that hasn't come forth that I can double-check from my own collection. Jim has stuff. John has stuff. Everybody. It's all in one place. We correlate it and put it in one, I don't know if I keep repeating myself, but that's what has to happen, and so I don't know what else.
Well, I'm going to go back to Linda's letter here to us saying she's offering to organize a basic board manual for our review. And Linda, you should never hear. That's terrible.
Yeah, but that also assumes that this committee had done its work in terms of you know, we had a viable and workable draft to present to the board as a whole, and we are far from doing that. That's number one. And number two, if Richard and Bill and others have this other material that none of us have seen, how are you going to get that to us? Can it be scanned and then sent to John and me, or what?
How about we send it to you and John? If anybody on the committee or anybody else has material they think should be included in this policy draft and manual, that they forward it to you. And I'm going to put the onus on you to take John's work with John's permission and consent and work with him and see if you can't put it together into one draft manual.
But one thing that I'd like to have done, though, is that it's fine to put it into one draft manual, but I think that the material that we looked at that was submitted by Micah and Loy is an attempt to clarify the relationship between the executive director and the board. Now, the portions of the draft that I put together had those 3.5 pages of policies related to the responsibilities of the executive director, and I think that we need to decide really coming out of the box here, so which ones of those policies we want to want to perpetuate. And I think that once that gets done, then the organization becomes a lot simpler, and we can simply divide it up into the general topic headings and add in some other policies that might be out there. But I think I'd really like to get some feedback on those particular provisions that are of existing policies and see whether or not we want to continue with a number of those.
I have not seen whatever documents were generated by Michael and Voy. That material.
Those were distributed at the last board meeting, I believe.
Is that right? I mean, okay.
Yeah,
yeah.
And Linda, I have those in a separate document too.
Do you? Okay.
And I can send those to you. But basically, they are all incorporated. They are incorporated in the compilation with some slight edits.
Got it. Okay.
I think you did a tremendous job in getting that done, John. I don't know how you did it, but I think if we take that John's document, which incorporates Michael and Voy's comments or governance rules, and whatever the 38 attachments to Dr. Burns' email, look at everything we have, put it all together, and then submit it to the board and say, okay, take your red pencil and start striking and crossing and adding and do what you want to do. And let's get a general consensus of everyone, because the board is the one that has to accept it.
So in terms of some strategies here, John has already pointed out, and you, Bill, have pointed out some areas where you think are going to be quite controversial. Is that something that we want to kind of discuss internally before this final draft document gets distributed? Because we could get bogged down in endless debate about committee structure or perhaps the parameters of the executive director. And it seems to me this would benefit from a guided discussion in some way.
Well, I agree with you. But and we can have as many meetings of the governance committee as you'd like to have.
Okay.
But we need to bring it to a conclusion before March.
Well, and I think that, I don't know if it was Bill or someone else that has suggested a working group, because I think that really is the way that we can get something like this, controlled. But like I say, there are a couple things that I think that we should get specific input from the committee in general as to what their thinking was. And like I say, that my main concern was on those to go through those elements of the existing policies concerning the duties and responsibilities of the executive director.
Okay, John, would you be willing to head up that working group?
You know, I can do that as long as, you know, that we...
Okay. How about Richard Shaw? Richard, are you really willing to work on a group like that?
Well, yeah, I was suggesting it. There's the old thing, if you suggest something, you have to be voluntary.
I agree.
So
and Linda.
I realized that when I made it, and I've had, you know, a lot of experience with that, so I'm happy to jump in, but everybody's been saying in a different way the same thing.
I think you're right.
I'll put it together, and I have notes that we can talk about now, or I can send to John the committee about the...
You and John can get, and Linda, you volunteered.
Everybody, because see, we're also remember, I'm not on the board, so when you say this was handed out at the board meeting, it wasn't handed out to me, so then I'm a little bit behind you.
But Leonard, you have, but Richard, you have an extensive background in this. You've been on this board a long time. And Linda, you volunteered, so how about the three of you getting together and seeing if you can't put something together for us?
Well, I think we ought to have Dr. Burns here in our meeting if possible, because he's now become...
Absolutely.
He's acquired subject matter expertise in the process, and so, and then
I have no...
So he's probably as important as anybody.
I'll do everything.
How about the four of you?
I'll assist you with...
Okay. That would be a great group if the four of us and anybody else...
You got it.
Energy to it.
Bill.
What?
This is Boy.
Oh, hi, Boy. How are you?
Sad, because I just got back from that funeral.
No.
But, John, I want to ask you a question. Is the material that Michael and I put together, which we copyrighted, just so you know, so don't worry about it. But the material we put together, is that causing a problem with the other stuff?
No.
Incorporating it?
No, I think that the only thing that my principal point is that when I incorporated all of your suggestions that that we had and with regard to the duties and responsibilities of the executive director that we had when looking at the existing policies, I had a number of them left over, if you will, that I didn't know if what the opinion of the group was as to whether or not we should continue those policies if they were incorporated substantively in the suggestions that you've made, or if we should eliminate them. And so in lieu of making that decision myself, you know, I simply included them in the compilation that I put together and noted them as such that we needed to take a look at those to see which of those we wanted to include. Now, it could be fairly a simple process if you and I think Dr. Burns should take a look at this too and to say, yeah, we want to include this or we want to modify this or this is already covered and come up with that, and then we can smooth out the document from there.
Well, I have a quick question here. Was the intent of, because Michael has some strong feelings about how this should look, I had a communication with him just this morning. But was your intent that what you and Michael wrote would be the overriding document that we should be dealing with? Was it intended to just override everything previously?
Well, naturally, the policies that we talked about we thought were important to be because of changing the type of structure that we were using policies for. But we, like I said before, if it needs to be changed, it can be changed. We can do nothing but vote on what we put in so we have something to start with and know that we can modify it, change it anytime we want to. But we were trying to set up something that would give people a basis to start looking at in writing other policies that were going to be needed.
So if I understand this, and John, help me with the interpretation, we should go ahead and use Voice and Michael's materials, insert them as is, and eliminate all the previous that don't apply. Is that right?
You know,
No, that's not what I'm suggesting.
I mean, what I did is to take a compilation of existing policies that covered a lot of materials that were not included in the policies that were proposed by Roy and Michael, and taking those suggested policies and fitting them into an overall structure that we've had. Because, I mean, in my view, the way that it was structured before, it was difficult to take a lot of the existing policies and put them into a structure. You know, unless you had, I suppose it'd be possible to have a policy related to the relationship between the board and the executive director, and to have a single policy on that, and then to have, you know, all of the other policies set up differently.
Well, I just want to make sure I'm looking, John. Your document that you telling what I'm hearing, I didn't get the Michael's and Roy's version.
I can send that one to you. Let's see. Yeah, here it is.
John. Dr. Burns is printing it off right now to give to Richard right away.
Well, okay, that'll be helpful background, but what I heard you say is you amalgamated your materials and those into the document that's dated or has a November appearance, this is 2018 caption. Is that the document we're talking about?
That is correct.
It's part one foundation. Okay. Okay, so that's not a really too lengthy. I have a few comments, both of which are just clarifications and a couple things about chapters. But anyway, before we even meet, I'll just send you that. I sent some of them earlier. But taking this and then taking the collections and the other major ones, like the trademark, or I mean, the logo, this is our logo, and just put them in one series of things with the appropriate edits. You say there's 10 things between everybody. You put them all 10 in there with the caveat, maybe we don't need 10, maybe we need 6 things. And I think that's what I was going to think, but I think our working committee can say, well, some of these are redundant, and I suggested a couple of caption changes and things. So.
Yeah, right. And Richard, I did. I've sent you a digital copy of what they had previously
Okay, great. There. So, I'm not going to second guess how accurately you compiled theirs into yours. I just have it back there. I wouldn't, you know, that's tough. The issue is the net result, and we like what we're looking at, however it got there. That's really the best place to begin with. Yeah.
Boy, I don't know if you were present or not, but what I did was I asked John and Linda and Richard and Dr. Burns to get together to form a work group. Because they can, of our 7, we're not violating any open meeting laws, and to work this thing out so that we get a form draft of some kind that we can all work on. And that's where we are. I don't know if you were there when I did that.
Yes, I was. Thank you.
Pardon?
Yes, I was here at that time. I got
all right.
Here at the end of Leonard and Dr. Burns' presentation.
Well, you're lucky, because I would have stuck you on the committee if you'd have been there. So.
No, I'm not capable of it. I went to public school.
For that. All right. Do we have anything else we need relative to the discussion of the policy at this point, or do we have a plan? We have a plan.
Yeah.
Does anybody have any comment? We've been going for about an hour and a half now, so I just wanted to, if everybody's ready to call it a day.
Well, I think that let's Richard, Linda, and I can get together and get Dr. Burns in on the conversation here, and come up with a plan and proceed that way.
Sounds good to me. Is there anything else we need to discuss at this meeting? If there is nothing further, John, I didn't forget your letter that you wrote in your objection to the language of the collections plan, but I think that you can work that out and work it through and then present it to the governance board, I mean the governance board of the next meeting or the board meeting.
Well, I think that's something that I just need to work out with.
I agree with you.
With the drafter of that document. And
I agree with you.
I think a lot of it simply relates to the position of the mining industry and the state of Arizona, which, as you know, is one of my basic interests. Matter of fact, I was at a day-long summit on the new technology of the mining industry and the fact that we want to establish University of Arizona as the Silicon Valley of mining technology. So we're moving forward quickly there.
Could the three, four of you, could you let me know when you have a tentative type of draft that we can discuss before the full governance board committee, and then I'll set another meeting?
Sure.
That sound good?
Bill.
Yes.
What should I do now relative to the agenda for the January 25th meeting concerning policy?
I think I would just put a formative type of paragraph in there saying, look, we are not ready to present a tentative draft of the policy to the entire board. We're working on it as fast as we can, diligently. We have these are the people that are working on it, and let's get it set for the March meeting.
Okay, I'll just do that in the president's report rather than anything else.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, you probably want to have a report from the governance committee.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll have a little report from the governance committee prepared, a written report, but I don't know that I need to make an oral report at the board meeting unless you want me to.
No, I don't think it's necessary unless some of the board members have any specific questions.
Yeah. Boy, you've missed a very informative discussion about collections that Dr. Burns put together a slideshow for us. It's on the computer. And Lynn had his report there, and it's really something of interest, and I think it's going to be very important to the entire board. And that could take up some time.
Okay.
Is there anything further relative to this meeting? Ah, you guys are all so patient, I can't believe it. If there's nothing further, then I'll... If there's nothing further, then during this meeting, make a motion.
Bill.
Yes.
Before you end, I want to make a couple of statements. Because I want to thank everyone for the effort. I'm fully aware that every one of us are volunteers. We don't get a paycheck for doing this. That everyone has put in to do this is just unbelievable. And as president, I just can't tell you how much I appreciate it from all of you, and I mean that very, very seriously.
Just like working for the federal government, boy.
And the difference is we may have to shut the thing down if you guys don't get this done. That's all there is to it.
Well, if what Dr. Burns says is true about the cost of managing collections is true, we might have to shut the whole place down.
But really, it's just unbelievable the effort that everybody's put in. And in behalf of everybody, I just really appreciate everything you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you, boy. But nothing further to
find out on you, John.
Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Second, meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye all.
Thank you.
Well, that's a lot of work. What's that?
All this.
Oh, it is.
And there'll be very few people that really realize how much effort has gone into this by the time we get through with it. Well, I'm talking about on the board.
I like the perfect example of, you know, the Einstein PhD thesis. You know, it was one sentence, in effect. Well, what was behind the E plus C squared? What was behind coming to that point? Say, likewise, you had the manual say, oh, Jesus.
That's right.
But this policy here that I have in my hand, which I haven't seen, is that the same thing that's in the...
That's just for questions, isn't it?
Questions.